Bootstrapped Web, 2 weeks in a row. We're back. How's it going, Jordan?
I love the streaks. What's happening, man?
Yeah, man. Friday. We're Friday. The fun thing with a little programming note on Bootstrapped Web, I don't know if anyone has noticed or not, but in the last several episodes, you know, we've basically moved to like no editor. Yep. we're just recording, and I'm actually using my friend Colin's SaaS called Elitu. We're using that to record and like really rapidly edit. And by that, I mean, like we're not editing. It's like it just slaps on the music, on the front and the back, and it integrates with Castos, our podcast host. And so that actually lets me like publish it today. Like we'll record this and within a half an hour after that, I'll just have it published.
Yeah, last week I was psyched about our episode, so I tweeted something about like, you know, great episode, something like that. And then 20 minutes later, you just ping the link. Here you go, it's done. I was like, ooh, that didn't used to be like that. That's nice.
Yeah, and even like for the first few weeks of that, I was like, well, maybe I'll just like publish it next week, like we always do.
Right, on schedule.
And then I was like, why am I making a task for myself next week? I could just press publish now. So yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
I like it. Elitu, Alitu.com.
Yes. Yeah, Colin and I are in a new mastermind group together, a couple other folks, and yeah, that's been good.
Nice, man. Well, it is Friday. It's the end of April, so April's almost done in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
How are things going? How was the week?
Going good. It's been, you know, it continues to be this chaotic mess. As we were talking offline just now, you know, it's a really weird thing right now because generally things are good. We're having actually a really great month. I talked in the last episode about how like a competitor shut down and that's been sending us a lot of customers. And we also just like randomly got lucky actually on the same day as that, like an affiliate had a webinar, somebody that I don't even know who they are, but they have a large audience. They've been sending us customers. And the general news and vibe coming from Clarity Flow is still generating, I think, some buzz that, you know, we're getting a lot of customers and a lot of interest and a lot of contacts and like requests and messages from folks, like, you know, and it's an interesting mix. I can get more into it in this episode, but like, it's I don't know, it's like it's a more hungry customer than what I've previously dealt with. They're trying to do more things, which is good. That's exactly what I was aiming for with this rebrand and the reposition and everything. But at the same time, so that's all good. But then over here internally with me and my small team, we are completely swamped with projects and complexity. And frankly, there's still confusion because we still have two websites. We have ZipMessage and Clarity Flow. And I'm hoping that by next week, we will be fully redirected to Clarity Flow, meaning zipmessage.com should very soon start to redirect to clarityflow.com. That's actually the easiest part. And clarityflow.com is all ready. All the pages are ready. We've already set up all, like, migrated all the blog posts and all the pages and created all the new stuff. That's all done. It's the accounts. It's the app that we need to handle. And we've been, my developer, super complicated. And it's even more complicated than you might even imagine. You know, I know folks listening to this might think like, oh, you could just do this or that. Like,
right, right. Half sympathize and half are like, what's the big deal? Just redirect this and move this thing over.
It's not. There are publicly shared links that are out there with conversations that are ongoing. That use the zipmessage.com domain. We're changing domains on accounts. We're setting up systems so that accounts can continue to use the legacy domain or use the new domain. We're using subdomains with accounts in them. But then even more complex is we also have this like viral flow where you can like share a link, that person registers themselves as a respondent, but then that person creates their own account. So all these flows have to keep working, and we're just working through that mess right now. And we've been working on that for the last like month and a half, and we're right at the tail end of it. And And then of course it's all working locally, but then on staging with the new domains and passing tokens around, and it's just, oh my God.
So you're in one of those moments where you're doing a lot of work that customers don't really feel and doesn't move the needle on revenue, but you have no choice but to finish it.
Exactly.
Is it a matter of...
Yeah, and that's the other painful part of it, is that my most senior developer is the one working on this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
instead of other things.
So she cannot be working on any of these other super important features that were, you know. I do have three other developers who are working on features. But yeah, she's all tied up.
Do you have any perspective yet? I know you're not out of it, but like if you could do it over again, you would ignore it and kick the can down the road for 6 months while, like, you know, what would you do? Or, you know, people listening that might be either mired in it or fearing going into it.
Well, I talked about this a few weeks ago when I announced the fact that we are rebranding, that I was reluctant to even rebrand, you know, like
for all this stuff, all what it meant.
Like for a while there, I did know. So if we rewind to like the end of 2022, fall, winter 2022, by that point, I had done enough customer research to know, like, all right, we are going all in on coaches.
Yeah.
But I was not yet sold on the idea of changing from ZipMessage to a new name. And I didn't love ZipMessage, but I was like, I just know how much of a mess it would be to change to a new domain name.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to avoid it at all costs. And that prediction is definitely coming true.
Well, you kind of knew that it was going to mean pain on the other end.
Yeah. But, you know, by early 23, I knew that was still strategically the right choice to change the name and go with the new domain. And I do really like Clarity Flow. It has really sunk in and I feel good about it. And especially with the new website, which looks amazing and everything. And I feel like we're at the tail end of the most painful part, which is like get the new website launched. And really, I hope by next week, it's like, as if we can get ZipMessage in the rear view mirror as much as possible, I feel like we're just about there. But yeah, it's been, I don't know if I would do anything differently. It would be like, cause I had planned a few different approaches to how to actually transition the domains. Like my original thought was like, we're just going to set a date and give everyone plenty of warning and just say like, hey, on this date, your account's domains are all going to start using the new one and the old one will not work anymore. And again, I know people are listening like, oh, why don't you just redirect the old to the new? And it's not that simple. We decided on a more technical, seamless approach, and that was more difficult to build. And then, you know, mixed in there, we had a pricing change. I talked about that. And now we're starting a mobile app and all this other stuff. So yeah, it's a lot.
Yes. I want to hear about the mobile app piece, you know, in this episode on what that means. I would be worried about it technically, but what else does it mean when it comes to working with Apple, publishing, the limitations, the restrictions, the danger, reviews? It's like a new channel all of a sudden.
It is. I'm very new to the whole thing. I've never built or released anything on the Apple or Google app stores. So I'm learning as we go.
Yeah. Okay. I want to come back to that because I feel like I can just keep going. Like,
yeah. All right. What do you got on your end?
It's necessary. All that. Okay. I have a quick funny story for you. So last week was the funding announcement, and that was a roller coaster high. You get the attention and the love and people reaching out and text message, I'm so happy, you're the man. You know, you feel amazing. So it's not surprising that by Monday morning this week, I was hungover emotionally. Mm-hmm. And I woke up Monday on the wrong side of the founder bed. I was gloomy, depressed, pessimistic. You know, I was in a bad place. It happens.
Okay. Because I get there times a week. So like, what do you think that this was like a rational thing? Like you can point to something like, oh, this or that happened, or just like, I don't know, like things are going good, but I still feel like shit.
No, I get triggered by certain things. I generally get triggered by external stimulus. Something I see, a text message, a bit of news. And my problem, the thing that I've worked on for many years that I'm much better now than I was, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, is that it's often driven by envy. It's driven by someone else's good news. And it's not jealousy. I don't want to take it away from them, kind of a thing. I just want that from myself also. And it usually will trigger some other pattern of memory or something, right? So like I'll hear a little rumor that a company that I'm familiar with in our space got a big acquisition offer, and it was from Shopify. Like that's a perfect bit of soup for me to deal with. Right, it's all these things mixed in, and something like that will put me into a dark place. It's just happens.
Yeah.
So you know, I got the therapy, I got the breathing, I got the awareness, mindfulness. I'm better at it, but you're human, and it happens.
I know that I'm not the only one who resonates with what you're saying here, but I absolutely 100%. I mean, especially the jealousy, the envy, you know, because that's the thing with this, with doing what we do, plus having these like circles of friends and who have, you know, what's really frustrating about it, I think, is that like, you know, we all know firsthand that we all have like more or less similar businesses. We run software products. Most of them are SaaS subscription-based software products. Yeah, different industries, different spaces, but technically it's software. People pay a monthly fee for the software. Like we're all doing the same
thing. Yes.
But like every person is on a completely different timeline and trajectory.
Yes.
And it's just like, I could look at one person and they got, you know, zero to X MRR in 12 months. Another person, very similar business, similar product, went from zero to the same X MRR in 3 years or 5 years, or like, and it's just like,
yeah, we try to.
You don't know which which timeline you're on. You know?
I had this experience I don't want to be too detailed, but a few years ago, a friend of mine and myself were having a fun competition when Cardhook was really growing by like 20-30K MRR every month, and it was like the most fun. He had a similar business going, and we had like this fun game because I would go, our MRR would be higher than his and back and forth. And then what happened with Cardhook, we know Shopify put a stop to it, and he just kept going and then got acquired and rode off into the sunset. And it's like, all right, it's not like one person, the factors that we want to matter don't matter nearly as much as we think or want them to, whether it's skill, hard work, like all this stuff, we just can't really control all of it. So a lot of it feels very strange from like an envy point of view.
I will say
we're on our path. We're doing our own thing.
You know, one thing I started to notice about my own habits lately, maybe like on a brighter note is I don't know if it's because I'm just trying to like remove a lot of that stress and anxiety from my life.
Right.
Or it's just like boredom and I'm getting into new things, but I'm just finding myself like, just enjoying and spending more time in like non-business stuff. And so for example, like I've just like, I kind of renewed my love for following sports in the past year or so. You know, growing up, I've always been into sports, but then in adulthood, I sort of put it down for a while. And now I'm like actually like watching Mets games and Knicks games like every night of the week and really following it. And like also the podcasts I listen to, like I would say more than half of them are non-business now.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Whether it's sports related or music or comedy or, and I think I think part of that is replacing and eliminating just too much business consumption.
Yeah.
But also replacing some like news and politics stuff. I also historically have been really into that, I've put that down, and I've just kind of lost interest. And again, just replacing that with like just more enjoyable things like following sports and getting into like exercise and strength training and stuff like that. Like, I wish I had more time for hobbies like music and stuff, but at least on the stuff that I'm going to do anyway, like listen to podcasts and hang out at night, you know, it's definitely helped, like, I think in a healthy way, have some balance in my life. Like, these are the things I actually enjoy that are not related to business.
I think it's great. And we should all acknowledge that we have a lot of control over it. So yeah. I'm with you. I think a few years ago we talked about, I backed away from so many business podcasts because it was like, it was just one envy trigger after another. It's just exhausting because the nature of those things is that you highlight accomplishments, which is cool. But
yeah, if I was so you should all stop tuning into our podcast now and go.
I don't think this podcast is not an envy trigger. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. This is like the opposite, totally. Right? Yeah. This probably makes people feel great about their business.
Yeah, there you go. That's why people listen. yes.
That's okay. What we're here for, folks.
Yes. Yeah. You're welcome. So Monday morning, I wake up like this, and the funding announcement creates activity. People who are looking for a job, potential customers, investors who want to get to know the company. So you got to capitalize on it. So you say yes during that week to a lot of calls the following week. And then you wake up on Monday and you look at your calendar and you're like, oh my God, I got to talk to 18 people I don't know this week. So one of those people was a VC at like 9 a.m. on Monday. So I'm in my bad place. I get on a call with this VC, start off the conversation perfectly nice, start talking. 10 minutes in, he goes, Jordan, how's your mental health? I was like, oh, homie saw right through me. Yep. I was like, man, I'm all right. So from there, we had like a better, more real conversation about the market and the challenges and what we need to do. So it went from like the charade that I was not up to. I was not up to the charade. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I hang up and I'm like, damn, that was a bad call.
Brutal.
Brutal. And then like 3 o'clock that afternoon, I get an email with one of the single biggest opportunities of my career ever. I'm like, God damn, this freaking game.
It's Jesus. Such a roller coaster, you know?
Yep. Yep. So yeah, I'm good now. Amazing. Friday.
Amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and just to cap, you know, like again, like we're coming up on almost there, like in striking distance of a pretty good MRR milestone. And help but think like I might, maybe among my friends, I've like set the record for like longest period of time it took to reach this milestone. Yeah. But yeah.
What are you gonna do? Are you gonna celebrate? You gotta celebrate a little, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, it's nothing crazy, but it's at least.
Yeah, whatever. It is what it is. That's how I was saying too. I was like, yeah, Series A, but I'm stressed. And then I got some good advice from someone who's like, yeah, but if you're not going to celebrate something like this, then what are you doing? At least go have fun. Like, okay, totally. Fine. I hear you.
Last time you were talking about a little bit go to market. So I don't know. You want to get into that?
Sure. So the big thing. Okay. Here's how I'm thinking about this, and I want to dive into more detail around what we're doing on one side. I think last time we talked about two different bets. It feels apparent that we have an opportunity in the enterprise, big merchants. So we are building integrations for Salesforce Commerce Cloud, Magento, and Commerce Tools. That is where some really big merchants live, 100 million, 500 million and up type, you know, brands that we all know that are way too sophisticated to be able to squeeze themselves into a Shopify platform. So our biggest competitor has kind of stumbled and beaten up their own reputation up there. And there is no other real legit checkout product up there. And it feels like that's a big opportunity. So we are heading in that direction. We hired a great biz dev person, Rob, who joined our team, who has a big network in those environments. And all of a sudden, that's opening up to us.
And again, as I remember it, what we talked about was like for those enterprise clients, the value prop that they see with going and working with Rally would be like, we are on this legacy system. And there's a lot of complexity that goes back many years,
yep.
But we need a modern checkout experience, and we can't just like rebuild our whole store. This we can customize and integrate without rebuilding everything. Yes. That like the main message?
Yes. And our development team is busy enough that we don't want them banging their head up against payments, security, anything having to do with checkout. So if we can outsource that to you, we get better results on the conversion and average order value, and our development team doesn't have to think about it anymore, then all of a sudden we're interested.
Nice.
Okay. So that's one of the two big bets. The other big bet is something that I have been working on for years, and that is to become the checkout for the composable headless ecosystem. Now, the reality is there was a lot of attention and energy and investment put into that concept of a headless ecosystem. So a bunch of commerce enablement investments were made for headless front ends, headless back ends, all this headless infrastructure. Unfortunately, that ecosystem has not come together the way people wanted and hoped. It just hasn't. It just is what it is. The reputation of the word headless got banged up because Shopify merchants tried to do it, and Shopify not only is not meant for it, but has zero interest in it succeeding. And so a lot of people came back with their tail between their legs saying, whoa, headless isn't worth it. It's too complex. So that the reputation of going headless has been beaten up. So people like myself and our company and those companies were moving over to a new phrase called composable. It kind of means the same thing, but sometimes branding matters in this terminology.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So one of the reasons that the ecosystem didn't come together is because companies had difficulty coordinating with one another. So everyone's got their own interests and their own incentives, and it didn't come together. We wanted to be the checkout that connected all the front ends and all the back ends. If you want to go headless, you start off by saying, all right, I'm going to use Rally as my checkout. And then from there, I can easily connect to any front and any back end that I want. Great concept. Might still happen. Not happening right now. So what we did is we grabbed two partners. We grabbed Pack Digital on the front end, which is a headless front end. It's fantastic. It's built on Vercel and Next.js and gives a merchant a ton of freedom and flexibility around their front end. Gives their engineers a bunch of flexibility on access to what's happening on the front end. And at the same time, gives the marketing team a lot of like WYSIWYG, drag and drop, reusable stuff, don't need code. So it's awesome. It's as if you took a storefront, like a Shopify storefront, and ripped it away from the platform and let it exist on its own as a solution that only handles the front end.
That's for like the design and marketing and like the, yep, the layout of the homepage, the category pages, the product pages, that kind of stuff.
Exactly right. Promotional pages, landing pages, bundles, design, where to put reviews. So yes, the shopping experience on the storefront.
Got it.
Then we linked up with a backend platform called Swell. So it's swell.is. It is a great product, a great API for e-commerce. And what we did is we're basically holding hands, all three companies, and we are launching a bundle so that merchants can go composable. But instead of having to do it themselves, these three companies offer you all a front end, a checkout, and a back end. So it's everything that you need, all for one price with one sales process, with one conversation, basically. Mm-hmm. So we are going to launch this landing page and a campaign called Go Composable. And I don't know of any concept like this that exists in e-commerce. I'm sure it exists somewhere on the web. I'm sure you've seen product bundles, but this is three companies with three different products saying, if you're a merchant and you want to go headless, go composable, we will do it for you. You won't have to do any like real coding. We'll integrate. The integration is actually easy.
That's what I was actually going to ask, was like, okay, so like how technical does a customer need to be to buy this Go composable package, right? Like, is it aimed at the, I don't know, like the typical e-commerce store owner who would just go sign up for, say, a Shopify or something like that, where it's like it's all done for them out of the box? Or, but then that, how do you balance like between it being no code, easy to use, versus like sort of the point of composable is like you want the customizable, you know, customization.
Yes. It It depends on the merchant. There's a lot of different points of view based on the merchant needs and their business and their payment processing ability, all that stuff. So merchants will project onto it their needs, which is a bit tricky because it's tough to nail down a you know, narrow ideal customer. Because one merchant will come to you and say, we are a high risk product and Shopify payments won't let us on. And because of that, we're on Shopify and we're paying an additional 0.5% on everything just because we can't use Shopify payments. And we're sick of spending $10,000 a month on nothing and having a separate subscription app that we spend another $10,000 a month on. And we're kind of sick of it. We just want to get away from that situation.
So it's almost like your customer is like, it's like if you have any sort of complexity.
Complexity, frustration, limitations that you're sick of. Like there's a lot of frustration in WooCommerce, you're not just like e-commerce and Shopify.
But I mean, like you're not just a bread and butter t-shirt shop because you could just take any e-commerce thing off the shelf.
That's right.
But you're selling something that is unique, and not that, because there's tons of unique things that are sold in so many different ways. And so like, that's your customers. Like if you just don't fit into the box that the big popular shopping carts put you in, then
that's right.
That's composable, right? Like that's what it means.
That's right. Or you're a Shopify Plus merchant, you're doing $30, $40 million a year and you have a development team and you're getting frustrated by the orchestration of apps that you need to make your business run. The goal of this really is to get into as many conversations as possible to learn exactly what this pocket of demand wants, because there's definitely demand. So it's going to be an interesting experiment.
The partnership is super interesting because it's like it seems like it's really, and it's crazy that it's like a three-way too. So it's like it just seems really mutually beneficial, and it's like you each solve the gap for the other two, right?
That's right. And everyone wants to make it work. And that does not mean it's easy to make work. So we have logistical issues. So we've got Slack channels and, you know, our company is going to handle the sales process, so to have the initial conversation. So this might be, you know, an epic failure, or it might be a spectacular success. But it's like, this is bet number two, right? Non-enterprise. This is to figure out if there is really a pocket of opportunity in between the Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce world of merchants that don't and can't go to Salesforce, right? Yeah. They're not going to go do that. And they kind of have nowhere else to go but Shopify. And anytime you have a platform with a million customers or whatever the hell they actually have, there's 10-20% that's just not happy. It's just the nature of it.
How much of an investment is this? Like, is it easy enough just to kind of offer this bundle, or is there like a V1 of this partnership before getting deeper into it? Like, how does that look?
Yeah. So we're looking at it incrementally. Phase one is, let's launch this landing page. Let's push it out through our channels, right? It's also kind of interesting that three companies market it. Right? Because all three have an interest. So I like the potential of it. But
it's just like any other product, right? It's like, prove every step of the...
Yes, that's right. So it's not, don't overbuild. So we have integrations with these partners, but it's not to the point where someone logs in and hits one button and everything magically unfolds. We know that we can get there. We know that it can be one click, you get accounts at all three, you have access to all three products from inside of a dashboard. We know that's just software. We know we can get there, but it makes no sense to build that. So right now it is launch it, bring in the demand, understand what people are looking for, because there's a very big difference between a $10 million a year Shopify merchant that wants this and a $500,000 a year merchant that wants it. Like, one is self-serve $100 a month and the other one is custom conversation $50,000 a year contracting. So it's tough to tell exactly where that will go, but I'll definitely report back on, hopefully by this time next week it is up. It'll be at gocomposable.co.
okay, awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask, do you have that domain?
We have the domain, so it's a little pressure. At worst, you go there and there's nothing there, and a few days later there will be.
There you go. Yeah, I guess I could talk a little bit about this mobile app thing. This has just been a in terms of like why we're doing it now, I feel like we're late to this. We've had the request for a better mobile experience, especially when it comes to recording messages on mobile.
Okay.
We've had that request almost since the very beginning of ZipMessage, right? So like well over a year ago. Because it's a mobile app, I just kept pushing it off, saying like promising customers like, yeah, we're going to get there. But like for now, it's usable on mobile using our mobile web app, all responsive. And that's true. You can use, Clarity Flow completely on mobile in a mobile web browser. But it's true that recording and finishing and uploading your recording when you're on mobile is not as smooth as it could be. And the other interesting limitation when you're on mobile is like we have audio only messages in the app. You can just do a mic only recording, but on mobile, that's actually a really clunky experience. Recording with your camera is actually easier than doing a mic only if you're on a mobile device. So I kept pushing it off for literally 2+ years just because I knew it's like a whole big project and there's a lot of unknowns because I've never built a mobile app before. But then as we got more and more into selling to coaches, the requests just became more of them.
Okay, like, so it felt more pressing. Is it the coaches that want it or they want their clients to have
both.
It?
Both. Yeah. And there's just a lot of coaches who are like, almost all of my coaching conversations happen on mobile devices. And that's a variety of reasons. Like some people just want that ability to be able to be on your phone and be out and about and talk and your messages, right? Like you don't have to be sitting on
elevates.
Computer.
It elevates the experience and the commitment from everyone when you use it in an app.
Yeah. And we also have more like sort of like performance coaches. So we see like guitar teachers and some like sports coaches. There's like a Taekwondo coach. There's some yoga. So like with that stuff, you kind of want a mobile device to be able to record a video of what you're doing.
Okay.
So then the Volley shut down, that competitor shut down and they were heavily mobile first. So all those customers like made the requests for mobile like come in like 10x was.
Okay, so the company that shut down had a mobile app.
Yeah.
So they were almost looking for parity there.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So the big ones have been like mobile and payments. And we're working on both of them. And mobile is the one that is in active development now. So basically about 2-3 weeks ago, I went to my agency, my Indian dev agency, and they're like half Ruby on Rails, half mobile app developers. So they have a lot of good developers like ready to go. Brought on one and so now I have a total of 4 developers plus myself. One is just the mobile app developer. The other 3 are on Rails, but one of my Rails devs is now working on the APIs to talk to the mobile app that we're building.
Okay.
I can get a little bit technical here because I know some people are technical. Because I'm learning on this. I can build a SaaS app in Rails, but I've never built a mobile app for iOS or for Android before. So, the big popular frameworks for keeping it all in obviously you could use something like Swift, which is like just for iOS, but you want to use one of these frameworks that you can have a single code base and deploy both an iOS app and an Android app, right?
Okay.
And who
provides that? Yeah.
The 2 big options out there are React Native, which I think is Facebook's thing or Meta's thing, and Flutter, which is Google's thing.
Okay.
We are using Flutter. And I actually was not very familiar with that at all. Really, neither of them before. But that's the one that my dev agency just specializes in, and they just got plenty of devs. And so then I started like reading up on it and learning about it. And it seems like a pretty solid platform. I think the React Native is what's more popular, but Flutter seems to handle all the things that we need to do, and they've got their own library ecosystem. So, you know, we're using library components for things like recording and a bunch of other stuff in there. So that was sort of an easy, obvious decision. Just go with what they, you know, they've built hundreds of these apps using that. So there's going to be some differences between Apple and Android, but the goal here is have a single code base that we can deploy to both at the same time. And then another technical or design decision that went into this was, you know, just figuring out like, okay, exactly what problems are we trying to solve with launching a mobile app? Because again, like the app is, our existing Rails web app is usable on mobile, right? So
right, we, performance is that
we don't want to just rebuild our entire SaaS app for on a mobile app. Like that's, first of all, that would just be insane in terms of time and investment, and it's just not necessary. Like you can literally access and use every function in our web app on mobile. But like I said, it's the recording experience that is difficult on mobile.
Okay, can you strip out for certain features inside of a native app? Okay,
so what we're gonna do, and this might change as we get further along, but it's working out so far, is the mobile app is going to be a shell for our actual web app. So all of it, like when you navigate around the app using our mobile app that you'll download from the App Store, it will look and function and feel exactly like our Rails web app, because we will literally be serving it in like a web view within the mobile app, except when you click the button that starts a new recording. That's when we will like slide up a new like mobile only experience for the recording experience like that, you know, so that the recorder piece is what's native to the app.
Okay.
And everything else in our web app, from the conversations view to the account settings to, you know, even like the login form and all that stuff is served by our Rails app into a web view. And that's, you know, because there's just no sense in like rebuilding and even just like building like APIs to serve all that stuff to a mobile app. We don't have to. We could just serve a web view.
Right. You get 100,000 users on it, you can reconsider exactly how to prioritize that.
Yeah. And I mean, all those views are already designed responsive. You know, they have responsive layouts already. So it's not like I need to go in and like refactor the front end to make it work. Like all that has been the design since day one. So now it's just a matter of like building a couple of small APIs just to, for the recording piece to interact, and the mobile app developers putting the recording piece together. And then the other problem that we're solving is mobile notifications. That's the other. So these are the two requests. This is why people want a mobile app that's not just our web app. Is number one, they want a smoother recording experience, easier to do audio only recordings as well. And then the other one is they don't want, like we already do email notifications. We don't do like mobile SMS push notifications. So they wanted that. I know there are ways to do that from a web app, but since we're doing a mobile app, like.
Right, then you have to go purely SMS and it's not the same thing.
Yeah, so we already have notifications built into our app. Now we're just adding the option to get them via email and or SMS push. That's basically just the two things that we are solving with this, which actually pares down the scope quite a bit. Like we're already, I would say, more than halfway built on this thing, and we're only about three weeks into it. It's going to be at least another month or two before it's like really polished up and ready to start to get up there into the app stores. But it's coming along pretty quickly, and I think that by the summer we'll be able to finally launch this and just have that very big check mark checked. Like, yes, we have a first class mobile app experience that
your
clients can use. Yeah.
Do you see that impacting pricing or conversions? Like, can you charge more for that? Or
it's definitely
have it.
Well, I'm not going to like put it into any specific tiers. It's just going to be available to everyone.
Okay.
But I've absolutely had messages telling me like, hey, like, I had to cancel because mobile sucks, or I didn't sign up because you don't have a mobile app.
I need that.
I've definitely had multiple messages like that, which you know, which also pushed me to bump it right up there to the top of the priority list.
Right, that's helpful in the prioritization.
Yeah,
people telling you directly, no, can't sign up, you don't have this thing.
Yeah, and I'm still learning on this front, but it's also interesting to sort of navigate Apple and Google. So like, you know, with the Apple App Store, my base understanding, and I'm still just in the middle of getting into this now, is like, we can't sell anything through. So we're not selling this app. It's a free app to download on the App Store, right? We are not doing like in-app purchases.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling my developers, like, it's the same as a typical SaaS app that also offers an iOS client, right? Like, so like we use Help Scout for our customer support. Yeah. Help Scout offers a mobile app that I use all the time.
Sure, that links to your account.
It links to my account. I didn't buy it from the App Store. I didn't subscribe to Help Scout through the App Store. I subscribed through their SaaS, right? It needs to be like that, right? So I believe that the way that you do this, or the way that most SaaS do this, is you just offer the app and you just don't link anywhere to the purchase flows from the app. You have
right. to purchase. You can't convert a free user to a paid user inside the app in any way.
Correct. And there might even be some weirdness, like you can't even like imply that like you can't even like tell people that you can go buy it somewhere. Like, but anyway, that's, and so there, I was talking about those web views, like we're going to need to probably like hide or disable links that point to like the subscription and the upgrade flows and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, look, you weren't busy enough and didn't have enough going on. So adding on a native mobile app makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and I brought on a separate developer to do the bulk of that. Yeah. But we, you know, just the other thing I'll mention real quick is we finally launched something that we should have launched a long time ago. And that's this new, a new client onboarding flow. We launched that last week, or a couple of days ago, actually. You know, from a product standpoint, this is another one of those interesting things where it's like the shift from ZipMessage to Clarity Flow, the priorities change. Right. So from day one, I designed the product to really emphasize like fast, easily shared, record, get a link, share it to someone else. They can get it. They can sign up, respond, get their own account. Boom. Like super fast and frictionless. Gets that viral loop going. We still have that. But the speed and the ease of sharing also it creates a problem, right? Like if you're a coach and you have a client and they just receive this link from you and they sign up, like, yeah, it's really fast and easy for them to reply. But then it's like, okay, do they have a password? Do they have a login? Do they need to go create their own account?
Mm-hmm.
And so we sort of had some flows around that, but it was a little bit confusing for our customer's client. So we moved to a system that actually slows down that process. And we do add more steps in the process to just kind of roll out the red carpet for your client, right? So now mm-hmm. we just launched this system where you can create an invitation and then fully customize the onboarding flow for mm-hmm. your client. And you can configure this for each individual client separately, right? So you can say, all right, I've got this new client, Jordan, I'm gonna send him this link. But before I send that link, I want to configure. All right, first I'm gonna want him to create to set his own password. Then it's gonna send you to the page where it will test out your camera and your microphone. Make sure those get authenticated and tested out and good to go. Then I'm gonna send you to a welcome video where mm-hmm. you can watch my custom welcome video just for you, or you can I'll use one of my template videos to show you, or I'm too busy to create all that stuff. So Clarity Flow has provided me with a generic unbranded welcome video that I can show my clients. And then as the final step in the onboarding, I can decide where to send you. we can create a new conversation for you and send you into that. We can send you to an existing one, into a coaching program, into a custom URL. So like this whole flow, like it's multiple steps, but it's just being more intentional and like asking a client to just like click here, set your password, get all set up, rather than just like, boom, you're in, like, all right, now go figure it out, you know?
Different nature of the relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I just sign up for someone's course or like whatever, however they frame it, I expect an onboarding experience.
Yeah. And it's
not,
like
not the most lightweight communication possible.
And again, it's not so much like it is a big new feature. Like you can like design these onboarding flows for your clients, but it's not the kind of thing where it's like, oh, we're adding a new capability. It's just like, we're really optimizing this flow because it is so important that they are successful, right? So like our customers, they need to feel like they have control and customizability over what their clients see, right? They don't want to just give them this link and hope that ZipMessage or whatever will take care of it. But like they want to know exactly what their client is going to experience, and they want to have that fine-tuned control. They want to give them a welcome experience. And you know, we took cues from what our customers were actually doing on their own. They were all creating their own onboarding flows where they would teach their clients how to use ZipMessage or something. So like now we actually like make that like a built-in first-class experience. You know, but like it, and then if their clients are successful in receiving the invitation, getting themselves onboarded, and now they're fully oriented and they can engage, like that makes them more successful with the coach, which makes the coach a more successful customer, keeps them longer. And you know,
are you finding any time to do like marketing of these types of features?
Oh man,
I feel like look, it's not the worst thing to just basically be getting inbound and rushing to get those people what they want. Ideally, they're the tip of the iceberg and there are a lot more people behind them.
Yeah.
And if you serve them properly and build features for them, then you're focused on exactly the right thing.
I mean,
and there's more behind them.
That's the thing that's like that is like a cloud that has been hanging over my head for the last 4 or 5 months, which is like, we had a bunch of marketing stuff happening and all of that has been on pause since we've been going through this transition. I do have a marketing assistant and she keeps busy with some things, but I like you said, I've been so busy with everything that I talked about on this episode, all these different projects, that I have these marketing projects all lined up that I just don't have the bandwidth to put on them. Like developing more articles, that's like getting PPC going. That's a lot of this stuff is like dependent on the new website becoming fully launched, which
hopefully
we should get there. But like it's also just bandwidth. And I would like to be doing more. There's more that I've had planned to do, but I just don't, you know, and even that competitor shutdown, like that came out of nowhere. I did start to do some things like hunt for contact information to do more outreach campaigns to those people. But like, I'm getting a lot of organic inbound anyway, as it is. I don't know. It's
MRR is going up.
It is. It's kind of interesting how when you raise your prices, your revenue grows. But you know, who knew? But that's been seeming to work. So.
Okay. When did you raise prices? I'm just trying to think of a marker out in the future on when we can look back on like, all right, on this date, prices changed.
April 3rd.
Okay.
So just about 1 month ago. So almost 4 weeks ago is when the new prices went live. And 2 weeks ago is when those free trials started converting into payments.
Yep. And I guess you'll see where churn goes alongside.
Yeah.
That.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool, man. I think that's it.
I think we covered enough.
I think we covered. It's Friday. It's finally starting to warm up.
Yes.
We are going to something artsy tomorrow in the city. We're going to see Carrie Brownstein talk with an artist.
Oh, sweet.
So yes. Something outside of work and kids.
Yeah. I think we're trying to have a low key weekend because we've been traveling so much, but I think we're going to try to go see that Mario Brothers movie this weekend.
There we go. I'm keeping it highbrow. You're keeping it Mario Brothers. That's fine. Right. That's we'll right. switch.
Yep, my daughter's softball game, and that'll be it.
There you go. Nice, man. Well, you know, everyone, we're thinking about your mental health.
Yes.
And hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah. All right. Later, folks.